Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
This is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Bill Cameron, our captain, our fearless leader, the CEO of The Drive. He is off today enjoying a Rolling Stones concert, as a matter of fact, tonight at Mercedes-Benz in Atlanta. So Bill Cameron seeing the Rolling Stones over, I believe it was 1970 when the Stones came to Beard Eves Coliseum as part of the tour. It's the same tour that contained the Altamont stop. The movie Gimme Shelter features the Rolling Stones on tour and the Altamont concert, among other things. They played Beard Eves, I think, twice on that tour in 1969 or 1970, among other. Very famous musicians to come through the Auburn Opelika area and play Auburn University. But the Rolling Stones, they are not playing on campus tonight. They will be at Mercedes-Benz in Atlanta playing the, we cheated a little bit and looked at the set list for earlier Rolling Stones shows on this tour. And as you can imagine, it is with some songs from the new album sprinkled in, and even a little segment where Keith Richards does lead vocals on a couple of songs. Aside from that, it is just as familiar. I mean, it's Start Me Up, and it's Satisfaction, and it's Brown Sugar, and Can't Always Get What You Want. And it's all of them. And, you know, Sympathy for the Devil and Paint It Black and, you know, The Last Time. Like, it's incredibly recognizable song after incredibly recognizable song. I mean, they're probably of the bands that you associate with 60s, early 70s classic rock, they're probably the last one in their, you know, in close to full power still performing the music like it was. But I mean, I know Paul McCartney still tours somewhat, and Ringo Starr was just in Vegas with the All-Star Band, but it's not exactly the same thing. Like, the Rolling Stones are still, you know, it's still Mick and Keith doing songs that they recorded in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s and now. I mean, it's incredible, and they will be in front of a packed crowd tonight in Atlanta, performing a lot of those hits. And our host, Bill Cameron, is attending that show tonight. So he will be back on Monday to give us a Rolling Stones breakdown. But we go to the bullpen and we bring in the defensive line coach of The Drive, Don Dunn, willing to volunteer some time on a gorgeous Friday here in the Auburn Opelika area. They could not have picked a better day for tonight's, hopefully it cools off a little, but they could not have picked a better day for tonight's downtown art walk. Be advised, 5 p.m. or so. I believe streets are already closed. So I would, unless you're going to the art walk, I would avoid the downtown Magnolian College area. If you are going, find some parking on the side streets, around. I know the garages are open on the other side of Gay Street. The garage on Wright Street is open, so look for spots in the parking garages if you're going there. That's the parking advice. But a gorgeous day, perfect night for art walk, and we've got Don Dunn in the house on a Friday. The pit boss himself coming to hang out with us. How you doing, Coach?
Doing great. Thanks for having me. Like you said, what a beautiful day.
Beautiful day. One of those, and I know you didn't do too much of this. I don't know how much of this you did back in your day, but there are recruits
Right.
You know, checking out the Auburn campus this weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you as a coach could have dialed up a better day to show recruits and their families around. A little bit warm, but you explain, I mean, the next 3 months are about as hot as Auburn gets.
Right.
And the weather during the school year is something close to perfect. And if, you know, and this is still, I think, bearable for folks who are used to, you know, a warm summer. So it's just it's a beautiful day, and that's you know, you use whatever you can in recruiting, and if you can use the weather and the natural beauty of the area, you do it.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, it has changed. We did have camps this time of year. That's what we would have, you know, recruits visit unofficially, and we would try to get them to our camps. You know, our passing camps, our individual camps, our senior camps, but now they can have official visits. And I think this month is really going to be busy from what I understand. And they've had some great kids in.
My my first ever visit to Auburn's campus was tagging along with a friend and his family. The friend was participating with Niceville in the in the 7-on-7s that you guys would do, the skeletons.
Oh yeah.
Back in the day, you guys pulled a couple of Niceville kids
off of
those off of those skeletons. Okay, so speaking of some, so I told you about this.
Okay.
So I did the Observer podcast last night. We had a Justin Ferguson thought up an Auburn football trivia game for me and a host of another show, Pablo, to sort of go head to head, and he pulled out some names and some numbers and some dates from the past. Now I there's good news and bad news here, Coach. All right, so the bad news is, and you're under the gun, you know, when you're in the seat and it's your turn to answer these questions,
right?
And there's an element of strategy involved, because if you get it wrong, the other person could steal. So I did flub, and I'm going to catch heat for this, I know, but I did flub the number of sacks in the 2005 Iron Bowl, the exact. Now I for some reason thought that it was 8 or 9. And it, in fact, you guys got him 11 times in that 2005 Iron Bowl. You got Brody 11 times.
That's
in that
when
Iron
the
Bowl.
Bumper stickers came out. Honk if you sack Brody.
Absolutely. I don't know if I've ever talked to you about your memories of that game specifically. That's... But that's, I mean, that was as overwhelming a performance by a front seven, especially considering when Alabama came to that game with one loss,
right?
And Auburn had been competitive all year. I mean, the
not
Georgia,
great,
Georgia Tech Jewel, the Georgia Tech opener, and the LSU game. I mean, you know, there's a thought that you'd maybe left a couple of them on the field,
right?
In a year where you guys were supposed to struggle without Cadillac and Ronnie and Jason and Carl, you know, after coming off of 04. But instead, it was. I think Alabama had more buzz going into that game, but quickly it became about their inability to protect their quarterback and the way that everyone was able to get in on the, you know, with Quentin and Stanley and you know, just the, I mean, your guys in the Josh, right? I mean, you had some monsters in the middle there, you know. So it was that, I imagine that's one of those. I mean, I've been around teams after really, you know, really triumphant wins, you know, really complete performances that led to, you know, that game went as well as we could have drawn it up. I have to imagine that's what, as a defensive line coach, you know, you guys were faced, but certainly on your, not the offense played poorly or anything,
right?
But that's I have to imagine that's how you guys felt after the 05 Iron Bowl.
Yeah, that was a special day. Hadn't seen anything like that before or since. As a D-line coach, you know, if you get two or three sacks, that's a good day. But the way we dominated up front, and everybody was in on it. It wasn't just one guy. And it just got rolling, and they were having fun on the sideline. I remember there was so much excitement, and they were fighting. All of them wanted to get in. Josh got mad because I took him out on a third and long. You know, he was, what, a 5'11 nose guard?
Sometimes they'll describe, you know, it's a fight at the bat rack to get to the pitcher, you know, when things aren't going well. It was a fight on the sideline to get in. And that was like a crowd that I feel like you could describe as bloodthirsty as you know, as things got, because I think they could tell that they were impacting the offensive line's ability to communicate, and that only makes a crowd get louder and rowdier, and that's what happened that day. So I was under on the number of times that we sacked Brody. However, there was a question I was proud to say I hit out of the park, and so no one has worn. Ooh, I'm blanking on who's worn it, but it was the last guy to wear 99 for Auburn recently. It was someone's worn it recently. No one's worn it since. But it was, but then Was it Nick? It wasn't Nick. He wasn't number 99. But I forget who. But it came down to Tez wore it. And I was able to come up with the player who wore 99 from 03 to 08.
Wow.
And thinking about, like, well, 03 to 08's a clue because that's six years. How many defensive linemen played 6 years? I was there on the fateful day on the practice field when Tez popped his Achilles.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that dude was – I feel like he was someone where you needed to be around the team or close to or going to practice or get the access that the media got because – maybe if you just looked at the stats, you didn't realize how much everyone else in that locker room, especially on the defensive side, looked up to Tez Doolittle and looked at him as a dude who had earned his spot and earned everything. And to have him have to deal with that injury. Luckily, he got another season out of it and got to finish his career playing quality football. But no, I mean that was a dude. I imagine. You know that's you know you're as a coach you want Tez Doolittle's in the room would be my guess
no doubt plus he was a local kid
right
and that helps and you know
I know some guys that had to try to tackle him in high school
Bill, how about him being a running back?
If Bill were here he would say Bill is related by blood to some people who had to try to tackle Tez back in the back in the day.
Big thighs, remember his legs, strong. You know, we were very fortunate to have two great ones, three really, with Zach. That's unusual from one school. You know, Tommy Jackson, Tez, and Zach Clayton. And all of them were good players. And the nice thing, and I was so lucky, and I've said this 100 times, they were all great people. Never had any problem with those kids. You know, they had their ups and downs, you know, like young people growing up do. They'd get frustrated with me, and I was pretty hard on them. But, man, I was so lucky to have those guys. Or not I, but Auburn.
Okay, so Jason Jones and T.D. Moultrie wore 99 recently, and I guess they were the first ones to do it since Tez, who was, Tez was one of my favorites. And, when I heard there was a D lineman playing 6 years in the 2000s, I go, I know who that was. And that's
great.
I
would not have gotten that one.
One of my absolute favorites there, Coach. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline presented by Sky Bar Cafe in downtown Auburn. Speaking of the thing we got going on tonight, the art walk, a lot of bars and restaurants downtown will be open for that, and you can because it's an entertainment district event. You can take your drinks to go from some of those places. Always fun to walk around downtown with an open beverage. Be safe.
Yes.
Have a safe and sober ride home if you plan to participate in that. But should be a lot of fun. Auburn Network is going to have a little setup. So go see. I'm being pressured by folks who work here to make an appearance at the Auburn Network tent at some point tonight. So I may go and say hi to folks at the art walk. But it's go see the Auburn Network tent. Maybe you see me there, maybe not. Who knows? I'm still negotiating.
Talking to your agent.
Yeah, my people are still talking to their people about it. But no, we'd love to hear from you. Phones are back in operation. A little bit different. We're going Larry King style, Coach, where we're just you're on the air and then we ask you who you are and you identify yourself. You're not on the air immediately. We'll cue you. You can just wait until we tell you you're on the air. You might wait on hold a little bit while we finish up the conversation we're having, but just bear with us, but 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. You can still text the show, too. We've told Drew to stop sending rude responses back to people. So 334-564-1840, 334-564-1840. That's the Drive text box, and that's sponsored by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Leave a name with your question or comment on the text box. By the way, if you listen to the podcast and you want to fire back, you have a question or comment or something, send it to the text box because we can. It's open 24/7, and we can. It's Drew's phone anyway, and we can. We'll read it on the air if we can. Make sure you leave a name or a nickname, a nom de plume for yourself to an alias that we can use to identify who left us the question or comment. Southeastern Industrial Contractors also sponsors the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center. We're going to come back. with more. We're talking with Auburn, with the Auburn former defensive line coach Don Dunn, the defensive line coach of the Drive, you know, and one of our favorites. Love to hear from you. Stick around. More Drive on the way. We'll be back.
Hey, this is
Gary.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number one of the Friday Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. Coach Don Dunn hanging out with us. Coach, what's... you're on the smoker tonight?
Oh yeah.
All right. What's the toughest thing to get right on the smoker? Is there any particular meat that's...
brisket? Because you got to really cook it,
delicate.
Or smoke it a long time. Yep. You can't get in a hurry. You can't rush it. You got to just let it cook. Don't try to take it off too early.
You can't let things get too hot, right? That's
right,
a Texas
right,
thing, right?
Right.
They're monitoring the flame to keep it.
Yeah, we run our smoker at 250.
Okay.
And then, you know, we have three racks, so we can control the temperature. The of course, you know, heat rises. That we learned that in seventh grade, some of us. I didn't, but someone told me that. But anyway, heat rises, so you put whatever you want to get done first, and then second, and then third. We'll put our butts on the second rack. You know, we can move them around depending on when they have to be ready if we have big orders. Now, football weekend, it's just rotation, because we're cooking so
constant,
much stuff. Yeah. But brisket's the hardest thing for me to cook.
334-321-1390, the number to dial. Let's get to the phones. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, guys, can you hear me?
We can hear you. What's up?
Okay, this is Jeff. I'm not sure. I know that seems like the line's still a little off base there.
Yeah, we're still taking a wrench to it when we're off the air trying to get it exact. You know, we're tinkering.
Okay, how you doing today, Dan?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for the call.
Good. Listen, I didn't catch the beginning. I know you guys were referencing to 99 Auburn jerseys. I'm not sure what your topic was on that, but I can reference back to a 99 early 80s. I don't know if you all recall, but Doug Smith.
Oh, yes. Woo.
Yes.
What a player. What a great player. Wow.
He and the great Donnie Humphrey.
Yes. Two good ones right there, buddy. Woo.
Two great tackles along. I don't know if you remember Big Ben Thomas as well.
Oh, yeah. I sure do.
Now, I'm young for Doug Smith's. I'm young for Doug Smith's and a college career. I know. I mean, played in the NFL for about a decade after Auburn.
But the Oilers.
Right.
He got drafted by the Oilers.
Right. You know, he came back and helped us and with Coach Tuberville. He was around our program. Big Doug was for a while. Great guy.
Oh yeah. I can tell you. He reminded me of the fridge, if you can remember.
Yeah.
I always thought of every time I thought of him. He was one of my favorite Auburn guys in those times. He and Big Donnie Humphrey on that line. I can still see them anchoring that D line.
Yes. You know, Doug had an interesting story. He grew up on the water. His family were like commercial fishermen. Can you imagine that big guy out in a boat fishing?
Oh, my God, the boat would sink.
Yeah, but he had some great stories, you know, being out in storms and very interesting. You wouldn't think that, you know, a guy that size would have a background like that. It was amazing.
You know, those I'll tell you what, Carolina fishing is a, like, that's
serious.
Competitive, and it's dangerous.
Yes.
And, yeah, a dude who grew up in that is gonna be fearless. And
right.
I imagine you probably got some of that on the football field with him.
Oh, yeah, he was a transfer, if my mind serves me, from East Carolina.
Yes.
He came because of Coach Dye.
Exactly. You're exactly right.
And Coach Dye raved about him for years. If you ever hear a lot of the old Sunday shows with Phil Snow, I'm telling my age now. Those were the greatest times with the review.
Yeah, that was a great show. Those days are long gone, unfortunately. I love to watch those Sunday shows with all the head coaches. Every one of them were characters, you know, and they had the Lay's potato chips and the Coke. And you know, I remember Johnny Majors, he had a crazy show. He'd get carried away and slam his fist on the table, and it was wild back in those days.
That was great. I was a young guy, and I remember, and I'll let you go, the Auburn show came on after the local NBC News, so I had to force myself to stay up to watch it at 10:30 at Sunday night. That's the only way you got the highlights.
That's true.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That was simple TV, but it was much better.
We got some folks, you know, we got some folks here at Auburn Network and some Auburn Network All-Stars who are, you know, they were involved in those 80s Auburn Network, the Auburn Football Review and the weekend show. So it's, yeah, they'll appreciate hearing nostalgia and hearing there are people who still remember, you know, how great those were and how much they enjoyed watching them.
Oh, yeah, I remember. I was a young kid, but I remember.
No, it made an impact. We hear from folks, and we appreciate it, Jeff. Good stuff.
Thank you.
We hear from folks who remember those shows. I always imagined, Coach, and you'd be able to shed some light on this, I always imagined that, especially after a loss, that's got to be one of the head coach's least favorite things to do. It's contractual, and you got to do it. But if it's a... if it's a gut punch, if it's a game you thought you were going to take and it didn't work out for you, it's a game you lose at the buzzer, or it's a game where you got stumped.
Yeah,
I don't know if the coach is necessarily eager to roll his sleeves. I mean, I talked to Coach Rigby doing the Troy stuff.
Right.
As soon as the game's, I mean, within seconds of the final whistle, she comes and sits down to do the radio thing. And I think it's maybe a little bit cathartic to get some stuff out of her system right in the aftermath. She's going to talk to newspapers and the website after she talks to me. But having to relive it the next day, which is what a lot of these coaches have to do with these, you know, with these coaches shows or whenever they're taped, it's got to be.
You know, I think when we were at Auburn, Coach Tuberville went right after the game and did the show. Mm. And, yeah, you're still all the emotions. You got to meet with the press, the recruits, the talk to the team. And back then, if you remember, we as assistant coaches, every assistant coach got in the police car and came to the station and did an hour call-in show.
That's right.
And I was so lucky. In 10 years, I had one loss. I made sure that the guy in charge, make sure I got a good game.
It's, you know what, people would hear that now and their minds would explode. The thought that it's like, let's get an assistant coach in here
right and after getting your butt kicked.
And let's take some and let's open the phone lines.
Yeah, it was live.
That got phased out, I wanna say during the Tuberville era, but maybe it was after Tuberville with Chizik where that tradition ended.
I think
ended.
It ended after us because I know you know, and each coach had – sometimes you had two because, you know, there was only eight full-time coaches or nine, and the head coach wasn't going to do it, and the coordinators usually didn't want to do it.
Maybe it was during 08. We decided to stop taking phone calls.
Yeah, that's the game I had in 08. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Maybe we stopped taking phone calls.
I think a guy from a moving van company called me and offered his services.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord almighty. Yeah,
that was a tough year.
I mean, you know what, though? When I think about, like, that decade of Auburn football, that tenure, I mean, it's a blip on an otherwise, you know what I mean? Like, you got any, and even then, like, people, I went back and watched some 2008, and it's like, oh, people think, at the time, I was like, oh, this is, because there, it was in contrast to the success of the previous couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some teams that 2008 team would have stomped all over in the years since. Not every year, but there's been a couple of them. I still look at that as a
Was an interesting season.
Yeah, and Chris ends up as he breaks a single season touchdown record. I think a year later.
Yeah,
you know, Chris. I mean, I think a lot of and there are other Auburn football years where you could say if you get a healthy quarterback, you know, if you have the trigger man, I mean, so much can be in place, but if QB1 is unable to perform for one reason or another, be it health, be it something emotional or mental, when that happens, it can throw everything into disarray.
The interesting part of that too is, you know, in 2010 national champs, right? So that O line in 2008, they stayed together, very very successful in 2010. Plus, you had a trigger man, a big strong quarterback.
Did you ever? And a great
tight end. Yeah. And it all gelled, and the good defense. But the offensive line, I think, was the key. And we knew they were going to be good, but it just one of them years, man. Everything that could go wrong went wrong.
No, I mean, and Lee and Ryan, you know, yeah. I mean, they got a lot of really valuable experience in 07, 08.
And they played as young players.
I mean, that is and you know, we'll come back from break to talk about this some more. But like, I marvel at guys who are fresh out of high school or even fresh out of junior college, like Too Tall last year, where it's like, if you're keeping your head above water at the line of scrimmage early in your career in the SEC, it usually means that you're going to be a pretty special player by the time you're finished playing college football.
Yeah, no doubt.
Because you're playing, especially now in the NIL era with the COVID years.
And the portal and all that.
You're playing against 23-year-olds.
Yes.
I mean, Connor Liu was a freshman center last year. And I mean, a freshman center in the SEC.
And you making the calls, identifying the coverages, I mean, where the safety is, the Mike linebacker, the protections. It is so hard.
And you're a freshman. You're a guy who was in high school the year before doing it against dudes that are about to be first-round picks.
Yeah, like NFL, 23 like, years old.
Yeah, 23-year-old first. Guys who can rent cars.
Big arms.
Yeah, I mean,
can rent a car.
Yeah, guys who can rent cars. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. Don Dunn hanging out with us. Drew at the controls. We'll be back with more. You are listening to the Friday edition of The Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. The Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, the host of the show, Bill Cameron, is enjoying his. I thought the music was continuing a little bit. Remember the headphones are. Anyway, so Bill's. Bill is. That one was on me. Bill is at the Rolling Stones concert. Don, are you here with Auburn with Coach Don Dunn, our defensive line coach here on The Drive? You're a Rolling Stones fan and all you fans?
Yeah, I like the Stones. I'm hardcore old traditional country music, but I like the Stones. You know, they've been around forever, and I've never seen them in concert, but they say that Mick puts on a great show. What is he, 78?
Something crazy like that.
Moves around, and he's got to be in great shape. I like them. I do.
I mean, a long time ago, you know, one of the tech companies, Intel or Microsoft or somebody, did they put a wearable on Mick and like tracked. He's moving 6-8 miles, a night,
concert.
You know, on that while singing, and everything else. You know, we don't promote it enough, but shout out to Tiger Country 104.5, which is one of our sister stations here, and a station that's doing. You mentioned you're a fan of old school country. They're sort of a country station focused on the 70s, 80s, and 90s of country music. A little bit of modern stuff sprinkled in, but I'd say more. For fans of a bygone era of country music. So if you've never checked out Tiger Country 104.5, I would encourage folks to check that out. I believe also streaming at RadioAlabama.net, but Tiger Country 104.5, an outstanding addition to our family of radio stations here on the Auburn Network. We're talking about just about anything here on the Friday edition. I had some trivia questions presented to me last night. Some of them happened to intersect with some players that the Coach Dunn knew very, very well. So talked about that earlier in the show. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390, the Drive Hotline, presented by Skybar. Let's get to the phones. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Dan, this is Bill.
Hey, Bill.
I had a question for Coach Dunn, so we're talking about pretty much anything. Coach Dunn, were you you were a graduate assistant at Tennessee? Were you on the staff the year that Auburn came up there ranked number one and Tony Robinson threw for about 500 yards and beat us?
No, I never beat Auburn. I was there 83-84. That probably would have been the next year, possibly. We'll have to look that up. But Bo Jackson ran all over us up in Knoxville. And, no, I was –
He did that to a lot of folks,
yeah,
Coach.
Yeah, but I was there at 83 and 84. Reggie White was a senior my first year. What a great player. But, no, sir, that we did not beat Auburn when I was there.
Yeah, I'd make going to that game, right? Tony Robinson. That's probably the best game he ever had.
Yeah, he was a great player. Tall, really tall quarterback. Thin, could move. Back then, he was probably one of the more agile, you know, athletic quarterbacks. You know, back then they didn't move like they do now.
Oh yeah, have you ever caught up with your old offensive line coach, Coach Nall?
Oh yeah, I talked to Coach Nall quite a bit. Haven't seen him in a while. He's begging me to come over. You know, he's over in Georgia, and he has a nice place down in the Panhandle. You know, he loves to fish and hunt. And, yeah, he's a great guy, great coach. But I do talk to him every once in a while. Yes, sir.
Does he miss coaching as much as you do?
Yeah, he misses it, but he's like me. He doesn't miss all the other stuff. And, you know, he was a hard-nosed coach like I was, so we probably wouldn't have anybody left. They ought to join the portal.
Yeah, I guess you can't coach the kids nowadays as hard as you guys did. And
well, I don't know. It would be hard for me to change. You know, I that's just the philosophy I had, that, you know, you had to be accountable.
I think the harder thing would be, I mean, yeah, you might need to adjust tone
a little bit,
attitude, but the harder thing to me would be judging. Like, I mean, I think that for a long time, Kids would be frustrated by a lack of playing time, but having to sit out a year seemed like a worse fate than having to wait your turn and earn playing time. Now, with the ability to go just about anywhere else, you know, it's got to be tough on both sides to enter into a developmental relationship, because, you know, if the kid's not playing, how badly do you want to keep him? And if the kid isn't playing, how badly is the kid going to want to stay? And that can hinder, you know, the guys that used to be 2 or 3 year projects that could eventually pay off. I feel like, you know, a lot of those guys aren't getting signed, you know, by the same schools anymore.
Well, that's true. You know, it's tough. I heard Dabo Swinney speaking, I guess at their meetings last week or whenever, about the same thing. He said he doesn't blame a kid that's, you know, second or third string that wants to go play, but it's so hard to keep those guys in your program and develop them, like you said. And that's all we had was, you know, we very seldom had a guy leave. You know, they would be frustrated, they would be disappointed, but you just had to tell them, look, wait your turn, look, this guy that's playing now did the same thing you did. And back then, almost everybody redshirted. Unless you were very, very exceptional.
Is Coach Nall still – I mean, he went to Southern like right after the 2008 season. And I want to – is it not Southern AG anymore? Because he was there – I mean, he was there for a very – I want to say he was at that company for a very long time.
He might be.
Yeah, I mean, it would be remarkable. I mean, if it's still Southern AG, like that would be the company.
Yeah.
I mean, he may have joined them.
I don't know the name of the company, to be honest with you.
I think it's Southern AG.
He's done very well, and they really like him, and, you know, and he's, you know, he's just same old Coach Nall, competitive and – he's a character, but what a great football coach and a great guy.
All right, enjoy the show, guys, and take care.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it. Yeah, it's always cool to hear about what some of those folks are doing these days. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. You know, we don't talk too much NBA on the show. You did have the Celtics last night winning game one. We're carrying ESPN Radio's coverage of the NBA Finals. We had game one last night on ESPN 106.7.
A blowout.
A blowout, although Mavs did get it down to 8 in the third quarter, and I think a lot of when you cut it from 29 to 8, people get, especially and it's not the closing seconds or something, people are going to get pretty nervous.
Right.
I think Dallas, and you've seen this before, they had to expend so much, and they dug themselves so deep a hole in the first half that they had to play so well just to get it to 8.
Right.
And once the Celtics counterpunched, once the Celtics had an answer for that, Dallas had nothing left in the tank. Like,
right.
That's a danger of, it's one of the dangers of falling behind early, mm-hmm. right? Is that you got to play so well just to even this thing back up.
Especially on the road.
And then you got to still have some energy left to win the game once you've evened it back up. And Dallas, they got close, but it was probably, that they needed a little bit more gas in that fourth quarter, and they used so much energy cutting the deficit down that the Celtics were able to ultimately, Al Horford, 38 years old, I remember, tell you what, I saw Al Horford in a Florida Gators uniform, yep. as the defending national champion.
Yes.
Come to Auburn, that Beard Eves was packed.
Right.
There weren't a lot of times in the and I liked Jeff Lebo, had nothing but professional interactions with him, thought he was an excellent was totally qualified and did as good a job as a coach I think could have done with the state of the program,
right.
in the 2000s. That place was rarely rocking and packed.
Mm-hmm.
Kentucky would do it sometimes, Alabama would do it. When the national champion Florida Gators came to Beard Eves, mm-hmm. Coliseum on a Saturday,
mm-hmm.
like that place was rocking with Auburn fans. It quieted down. If you look at the final score, Florida was defending national champion for a reason, and they took care of business that day. But Al Horford was the center for those Gators, and he is still out there looking for. Is his first title? This would be his first title, I believe. I think this would be Al Horford's first title.
Wow.
Looking for his first NBA championship.
Mm.
But a guy who's been an excellent pro for coming up on two decades.
Wow.
And just hitting big shots in the NBA Finals as a 38-year-old, and helping the Celtics to a Game 1 victory in what is hopefully a long and competitive series with some high stakes games.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd love to see a big important Game 5 or a Game 6. Feel like Dallas is feeling some pressure to win Game 2 because if this thing's 2-0 going back to Dallas, suddenly you've got to hold serve. You got to take. So we'll see what happens in Game 1 that looked like it was going to be not all that interesting, got a little bit more interesting in the second half, but then the Celtics able to put away that rally and secure the victory. The other piece of NBA news was the Dan Hurley and the Lakers stuff, which is, Dan Hurley, back-to-back champion with UConn. UConn has lost a lot of that roster to the NBA. They'll still open the season as a preseason top 10 team. I think people still like the job that Dan Hurley is doing and the work he's done to build this roster. But I think a third national championship feels like it would be a bit of a surprise based on where people see this UConn roster compared to some other teams right now. Maybe Dan Hurley wants to strike while the iron is hot and jump to a storied NBA franchise. And I imagine if an NBA team, even if it's the Lakers or the Knicks or the Celtics, if you want to lure Dan Hurley away from UConn right now, you better be willing to, like, he's going to give you a list of demands. And you better be willing to meet, like, he's got all the leverage in the world if an NBA team wants to pull him away. And so, how often are you going to be in a situation in your career where you have all the leverage in the world and the Lakers are on the phone?
Yeah, where they say he's playing with house money.
He's playing with house money. You're absolutely right. I mean, so he could stay and continue the dynasty that he's built. He's still just turned 50. I think he just turned 51.
He's not
very
old.
I mean, he's got that option in front of him. But if he wants to coach LeBron James in what is probably the final season of LeBron's career, and also coach, although I think that's part of the story with the Lakers. The other part is that they also have Anthony Davis under contract. Anthony Davis can be the best or second best player on a great NBA team if you put the right pieces around him. Could Dan Hurley be the guy who unlocks, figures out how to build a champion around Anthony Davis post LeBron? I don't know. I mean, I did not think an NBA team would come looking at Dan Hurley, and I didn't think Dan Hurley would seriously entertain this sort of thing. But the more, I mean, if like I said, I mean, how often are you going to have all the leverage with the Lakers on the phone? Like, I mean, it's I can understand.
Yeah, they're still L.A. You know, that's the tinsel town. All the celebrities.
Well, and I think the franchise is a well run NBA franchise compared
to
others.
Is Riley still involved?
So Riley's a Heat guy.
That's right. I'm sorry. Jeannie
Buss, right. The doctor's daughter,
right.
And former fiance of Phil Jackson, yeah. is the president and owner. Right. Rob Pelinka, longtime sports agent, yeah. Is the GM. But it's an organization that, you know, that they talk about really going out of their way to treat people who are good to them well, you know, whether it's rewarding them with contracts later in their careers or you're making sure all the accommodations you could yes, the location has something to do with it, but there are other NBA franchises in big cities that have not enjoyed the success of the Lakers. Some of it is organizational stability. You've seen well-run college football programs and disjointed college football programs, and I think the Lakers, for the most part, are seen as a well-run franchise. I could see why Dan Hurley would want to jump to that rather than something a little bit more chaotic or something where it's going to be tougher to land big-ticket players. I hope he's, you know, for the college game, you know, I hope he sticks around. Wouldn't blame the guy at all if he comes to it. If he becomes the highest-paid coach in the NBA and it's with the Lakers and it's a fully guaranteed 5 or 6 or 7 year deal, I mean, it's dead. UConn tried their best. I mean, right. You know, it's. I'm sure UConn appreciates everything he did. UConn's won national championships with 2 or 3 other coaches in the last 5 years. You know, 15 years, they'll figure it out. But it's it would be. You're right. He's in the catbird seat.
Exactly. Like
he's playing with house money. We'll be back with more hour number one of the Friday edition of The Drive. Stick around.
Hey, this is Kyle Rush from BC Stone.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email TheDrive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Final segment of hour number one here on the Friday edition of The Drive. A beautiful Friday afternoon here in Auburn. Hopefully you get to enjoy the weekend in your own way. Downtown tonight, I don't want to get the name wrong. I think it's the Art Walk, but I think I may have that wrong. It's like the downtown Auburn. There's an event downtown tonight. That's the Summer Night Downtown Art Walk. Summer Night was the term I could not think of, but that's going on it's an arts festival. Downtown Auburn traffic will be blocked, street parking available, parking garages open, restaurants and bars commemorating it with to-go drinks. There's arts and crafts for sale, live music. If you're not doing anything and you're in the area tonight, always a good time. Auburn Network will have a tent available for the Downtown Art Walk. So, yeah, come check out what's going on in Downtown Auburn tonight. A very cool event presented by the community, and that's getting started in just a couple of minutes downtown. I believe 5 p.m. the start, and that's going on till 6 to 10 tonight. So as soon as the show's over, folks, I think already headed over there setting up and things like that. But 6 to 10 tonight. In downtown Auburn, the Summer Night Downtown Art Walk, and we'll be there with Auburn Network. I'm still touch and go. I'm thinking I might pop over. You know, I might. You know, I'll see. You know, I can't let down my fans. But it's that is going on tonight in the in downtown Auburn. So check that out. Apparently, I've been roped into, Coach. I'm doing the Montgomery Rapids tomorrow.
So wow!
Bill wasn't aware of this, but they've installed Rapids in downtown Montgomery.
Seen it on TV. Really nice.
Yeah, and so I'm going with the family. Good. We got some people in town. I'm going
to
go check that out.
Good. Supposed
tomorrow
to be nice.
Morning, and I'll make sure I've got my the will and testament ready to go, and the floaties
right.
fully. floaties fully inflated as I jump in there. You know, I'm an okay swimmer. Like, growing up in Destin for all the beach. That's one thing where I probably wouldn't have made it out of, I wouldn't have made it to 10.
Right.
If I wasn't some of those currents.
Oh, man.
Hadn't shown me how to swim.
For sure.
334-321-1390 is the number to join in. Hour number two coming up, the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Don Dunn, Drew at the controls. Stick around.
The sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in hour number two of the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio, Coach Don Dunn hanging out with us. Bill Cameron is getting satisfaction at a Rolling Stones concert tonight. He is in Atlanta checking out the Rolling Stones. So if you see Bill the Mick might bring him on stage to do a couple of notes, do Miss You, do the high notes in Miss You or something. But Jumpin' Jack Flash or something like that. It could be. So Bill will be there tonight. And be on the lookout if you're also going to tonight's Rolling Stones concert in Atlanta for Bill and Kathy enjoying tonight's festivities. We actually did hear from the Cameron family member who had to try to tackle Tez Doolittle, talking him a little bit during the break, and he can report back that it was indeed no fun trying to stop former Opelika running back turned Auburn defensive lineman Tez Doolittle, somebody coach you saw up close for his entire Auburn career. And strong fella.
Yes,
came through thick, strong, hardworking. Yeah. Too. I mean, that's the other thing. Like, I don't know how many. I feel like I would hear, and I won't use any names, but like I would hear stories of defensive linemen whose work ethic was being questioned, and you didn't see those guys on the field much, and usually they weren't around for a very long time.
No, like, they didn't last long.
I mean, and I can't imagine there's a position where you can do a lot of coasting in college football, but I would think the line of scrimmage is one where it's like, look, you can be the most talented. You can be the most talented offensive tackle who's ever existed, and if the work ethic isn't there, you're gonna get beaten more than you should by not just the guy that you're trying to block, but guys that you're trying to beat out for playing time and stuff. Like, it's just, I mean, it'll come through in the details.
Yeah, it all comes out, and effort, attitude. You can't replace that.
You said effort when I was asking you. Last week you're watching a little tape with Brian Matthews, mm-hmm. and I was like, what are you looking for if you get a highlight reel of a defensive lineman or something, and that especially on a highlight reel,
right?
Like, the effort's got it, because if the effort's not there on the highlight reel, what is the everyday, like, what's it going to look like when I watch every snap he's ever played, right?
Exactly.
Like, the effort's got to be explosive,
yeah.
on the highlight reel, yeah. And among other things, you want to see like, size is nice, but you need to be able to move at whatever size you are, mm-hmm. or it's limited in how much they can help you. But that stood out to me, the idea that if the effort isn't, not necessarily blow away, but if it's not apparent, if you can't see the effort there, then you do wonder, like, is that ever gonna click, later on in your, let some other coach try to unlock that potential.
Exactly.
If the effort's not showing up on the highlight field.
Yeah, that is to me, that was probably the most important thing, is effort, then attitude, and then work ethic away from the field. How you gonna do in the weight room, how you gonna do in the classroom, conditioning. But when you're out there between the white lines, you have to give 120%, or you're not gonna make it.
And that's, we always hear from folks who, it's like, well maybe that player is somebody who doesn't practice well, but when the lights are on, it's like, yo, you know what, if
maybe what was the guy's name talked about practice?
Iverson.
Yeah, now he might have been able to get by with that, but yeah, I love that dang clip.
You know what? He was pretty good in games.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, that's where you know you saw and at some point he practiced well enough to get on the floor.
Right.
And when like I always hear that as like, well, put the third stringer in because maybe he doesn't practice all that well, but he gets in the game. It's like, I don't know if that's. I mean, at some point maybe, like if the results from the first and second stringers are that unacceptable, then you know let's throw all the spaghetti against the wall and see what sticks. But you know it's and I heard especially in quarterback situations, you know, if you're struggling to find, you know, I remember a player told me one time, not an Auburn guy, but somebody who said, you know, if you're going to quarterback three early in the season, it's a sign to the team that there's no plan. It's a sign to the team that it's like or whatever plan there was during the off season and during the during the nuts and bolts preparation time for the year. You know, if you're going to a third quarterback for performance reasons early in the season, it's like what I mean. We're just hoping for, you know, we're making it up on the fly. Like we're freestyling, trying to find a direction that probably should have been found
earlier,
months earlier.
Yeah, you're right. If you're like second or third game and you've already gone through your first two quarterbacks without injuries, then you definitely got some problems. And you know, kids are smart. They know what's going on. They catch on, and then they start doubting themselves. And the key is that guy behind the center, and we all know it. But I think more so now than ever, you have to have a trigger man, and he's got to be a leader. He's got to make things happen. And
it's one of my favorite things. Yeah. One of my favorite things to ask at media days is like where. How did you decide on this quarterback? What does he do that makes him special? What's he gotten better at since? Because that's, you know what? That's something a head coach who's excited about the season will have answers for. Like if you like your prospects for the upcoming year, you know who your quarterback's going to be. You probably have an answer as to why it's him and not someone else, especially in this day and age.
Right.
Why you didn't replace him in the offseason with the seemingly unlimited options out there in the transfer portal. And you get some interesting stuff, you know, from coaches because the answer to those questions is often it's a mirror into what does that coach prioritize when he's looking for a quarterback?
Yeah.
Which isn't always the same. I mean, everyone could say accuracy and timing and leadership and maturity, but often you'll hear anecdotes or you'll hear stories about other things that quarterback does well to ingrain. I was struck by, and I know it didn't necessarily turn into an overwhelming year on the field, but hearing the stories last year about the efforts Peyton Thorne had made to learn everyone's name. He had gone out of his way to get and to be able to put names with faces. You know, he'd gone through the media guides and he'd gone through the website to learn the personnel and who they were, so that he would be able to put a name with a face very early on in his tenure, because he had other things that he needed to be worried. Like, he didn't need to be learning that while he was, you know, he wanted to be worried about other things.
Right.
And you hear stories like that you know, I think they it tells it it's. Well, it helps you remember, you know, the human aspect to this, but it's also like you learn like what coaches really value and prioritize as in who they want to go with for what you just said, the most important position out there.
Right. It's important, and it means a lot if you're like a offensive tackle and your quarterback knows your name the first time you meet him. I think that kid's going to have a good year. I think last year, you know, it's last year. Can't do anything about it. But he was not surrounded by a great, you know, bunch of athletes. The best way I can say it.
It limits what a play caller can do.
And
right?
With the coaches, first year with him, I really think he's going to have a good year. Plus, he's got some help.
The argument for Peyton Thorne that I don't know how much better how much better folks should expect him to be, but if you're not confident in a quarterback's targets, if you're not confident in what kind of pocket he's going to have, if you're not confident in your team's ability to run the ball in crucial run situations, that can impact what kind of offense you have and what the play calling looks like and what you do. And if you don't expect receivers to be able to get open, you become a 10 yards and in offense, and that can reflect poorly on the quarterback statistics, even though it's not necessarily just because of the quarterback. It can also be because of extenuating circumstances, which is where I feel like Auburn has tried to address some of the things that you would need to fix to have a quality offense with Peyton Thorne as the quarterback. We'll see if it works.
Yeah.
But they've tried to upgrade at key spots around Peyton Thorne while hoping that Peyton Thorne in year two at Auburn can also make some personal improvements.
And the fact that Coach did not go out and definitely get a quarterback, that tells me probably more than anything else that he believes in him. He sees what he can do and what he will do, and he'll be better. I mean, there's not a doubt in my mind. I hope I'm right, because I think he's going to have a great year.
334-321-1390 is the number to dial. Let's mention that hour number two of the drive, sponsored by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Want to say again, you can join the show, 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Full disclosure, the light that blinks has given us some false alarms here. So sometimes we thought there was a caller on. We're going to clear the line to be safe. Lines are open right now, 334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline presented by our friends at Skybar Cafe. You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. And I would encourage you to check out the podcast this week. Great stuff from Brian Matthews. Great stuff from Jason Caldwell. Justin Ferguson had some insight into and he's great, but we had some insight from Justin into the men's basketball roster construction as we get. I mean, they're pretty much done. You had Miles Kelly, who's now on campus, the Georgia Tech transfer. Seems like Bruce Pearl is going in. Coach, we've never had a season. I have not gone back and checked every season ever, but if someone can find one, I'll eat some crow on this. But like, not literally, but I'll take it back. But the belief is that Auburn and Alabama, and more accurately Alabama and Auburn, are going to go into this season as the top two teams in men's basketball in the SEC. That's never happened. We've never had 1 and 2 in the state be the two in-state teams in the conference.
I agree.
You rarely have Kentucky outside the top two in the preseason. Arkansas has had their years. Tennessee's had their years. Florida has had their seasons. Texas and Oklahoma are both quality men's basketball programs, too. I don't think Oklahoma has the players this year, and Texas lost a lot from last year from that team as well. I think they could be competitive, but I don't think they're coming in as preseason favorites to win the conference or anything like that. Alabama will be close to a consensus favorite to win the league. Their chief competition, I think, will be perceived as Auburn, and there could be something of a gap, whoever the third best team in the conference is. Some folks will say it's Arkansas, Kentucky, Mississippi State's got Josh Hubbard, A&M brings back some key pieces, including Wade Taylor. People forget Wade Taylor was the preseason SEC Player of the Year last year, even though he was beaten out by Kinect and some of the other guys, but still had a first-team all-conference type of season. I think it is uncharted waters for a year where Auburn and Alabama and Auburn are your top two teams in the SEC, your preseason favorites, and both go into the season. It's rare because Auburn hasn't had that many seasons where they go into the season as a bona fide Final Four contender.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're going into a season where the two teams in the SEC are both genuine contenders in basketball, men's basketball, to make the Final Four, win the conference, win the national championship. And that's just a really exciting – I think that's a really exciting thing for the state.
Right.
And I think it could lead to, a type of – just a type of energy and a type of season that we've never – I mean, it's – you didn't think of it as Duke and Carolina, but, like, here we are, and the two in-state schools desperately want to beat each other, but they also both think they can win it all this season with the teams they bring in, and that's going to be can't wait. We're just a couple of months away from that getting going.
Yeah,
we'll learn more. I guess we'll learn more scheduling details over the course of the mm-hmm. summer. Who's gonna where exactly they're gonna go? Who's coming in to Neville for out of conference games and stuff like that? But we're into the which is another reason why the Dan Hurley thing is so crazy. The thought that a coach would leave now. I mean, the work is done. Players have gone into the portal and picked UConn. Right? I mean, guys have decided not to go to the NBA draft, mm-hmm. and not that Dan Hurley. Can't pick the Lakers because he owes it to any of those guys, because I think that's wrong too. Dan Hurley's got to make the best decision for himself, but that's just a brutal break for anyone who went to UConn. If Dan Hurley takes the Lakers job, it would be a brutal brutal roll of the dice for any person who went to UConn this season thinking, oh, I'm going to go play for Dan Hurley in pursuit of a third national championship at UConn. And I wonder if the window opens up for any of those players to go elsewhere, and what kind of market there would be for the services of UConn players on the team
I think they get, 30 days if that happens?
You get 30 days, although I don't know
where are they going?
Well, you get 30 days, but I mean, it's 30 days, but I thought that was during the season. I guess they could get a special portal exception. I guess it's any time. If your coach leaves in the summer after the portal window closes,
But if you have a full roster, what do? Kick a guy off and bring in somebody else? It's a tough deal.
If you think he would start for you.
Yeah.
All's
fair in the portal.
I don't know. I mean, that's why, that's. It's not the only reason, but some coaches hold on to a scholarship. Some coaches hold on to a scholarship later on, so you never know what might shake loose.
Yeah, but I agree with you. I think Auburn and Alabama definitely be in the top 10 when the rankings come out, and I expect big things out of both of them. It'll be exciting when those two play.
And it'll be great. It'll be great for the state.
To have
that kind of energy.
It's good
with
for the SEC.
Programs.
And it's going to be a strong league again. They'll be the two best teams, I think, without a doubt. But, man, what a tough league with Texas and Oklahoma coming in.
Yeah.
And then women's softball, we hadn't even talked about that yet. Already got a team coming in that's national champs.
Yeah, we'll
four
talk,
times.
We'll talk about the softball thing with Auburn. Auburn making a choice with the coach
and
going with Team Malvo as their new as the new softball coaches there for the husband and wife team of the Malvos, former Tennessee assistants coming in as the new leadership of the Auburn softball program. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more when we come back. Stick around. You are listening to The Drive.
The Edward Via College of Osteopathy
and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Coach Don Dunn, hanging out with us. Bill Cameron seeing the Rolling Stones tonight, so he will be back on Monday to tell us all about.
We hope,
hopefully,
he'll be traveling with them.
He might be on tour. Yeah, they might have saw him dancing, and
The Grateful Dead had all those people.
They might hand Bill a tambourine and say, you're in the band now, Billy. So 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. Love to hear from you. We're talking about all kinds of things. Remembering some guys, from Pat. I'm always curious about sort of what stood out to you mm-hmm. about a situation or when you're doing some evaluating. Always happy to learn more from the coach. But let's take some phone calls. We got somebody hanging on here. So a caller, you are on the air.
Hey guys, John in Auburn. Good to talk to you. Good to hear from you, Coach Dunn.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, John.
Hey, I've been doing a little bit of research. I'm a lifelong Auburnite. I'm 40 years old, and I found something interesting, and I thought there's an interesting tie-in to Coach Dunn here. So I was kind of going back through. We think of players who played in Jordan-Hare, maybe opposing players, and went on to have big pro careers. But I was looking at coaches who coached at Jordan-Hare and opposing coaches, and, you know, Pete Carroll comes to mind in the professional ranks when he coached for Southern Cal. A couple that I didn't realize until I started doing some research on this is Alabama's offensive coordinator actually cost them the game in 97 at Auburn was Bruce Arians, who wound up obviously being a Super Bowl winning coach. And then my first game I attended in 1989, Auburn played University of the Pacific, which doesn't even have a football program now.
Right.
Their tight ends coach that day in Jordan-Hare was John Gruden.
Yes. I was on that staff. Not that year. I went to Pacific. What a small world. In 1990, John Gruden, Charles Davis, who is a Fox, I think he's on Fox, a big-time announcer now. He played at Tennessee when I GA'd there. John Gruden, and then Walt Harris was the head coach. Walt went and coached the quarterbacks for Pete Carroll at the Jets. And if you look at Pacific's history, they had a lot of coaches that were pro guys. It's amazing. Alonzo Stagg coached at Pacific years and years ago.
It's unbelievable. And what I was going to ask Coach Dunn, is there anybody who comes to mind when you were at Auburn or Ole Miss or any of your stops where, you know, you coached against a guy or saw a position coach or just interesting coaches you maybe had coached against or with?
Well, you know, that's a great question.
I've got a couple I can jog your memory with.
The Rocker brothers, I think they're pro D-line guys.
So one that I like to surprise people with is a coach. You were the defensive line coach when Auburn went to the Cotton Bowl in 06 and played Nebraska.
Yes.
Nebraska's quarterback that day is Zach Taylor, who is now the head coach of the Bengals.
I did not know that.
Zach Taylor, current Bengals head coach, is the now Bill Callahan was coaching Nebraska.
Right.
Bill Callahan's son is now the coach of the Titans. I think he was doing something for Nebraska that day. I think he was still around at that time. But Zach Taylor, the quarterback for Nebraska that day, is the guy who's been the Bengals coach for the last couple of years, coaching Joe Burrow. And if you remember in 08, Tennessee came in Fulmer's final season with Dave Clawson as the new offensive coordinator.
Okay.
He had just come over, I want to say it was D1AA. He had been a successful offensive coordinator somewhere in the D1AA ranks, left that to be, maybe it was a head coach somewhere.
And then Kippy Brown was on the Tennessee staff when I was there. He coached in the pros forever, receiver coach. Man, that is a good question. I'll have to go back and research that.
Well, thanks. I'll leave the phone line open for others, but thank you for your time, Coach Dunn.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, great stuff there. You get some fun names from
I'm going to have to think about that tonight when I'm cooking.
From the past, think about some guys. And Clawson, you know, the offense didn't really work out for Tennessee there in 08, but he ends up getting a head coaching job in the MAC, and then that turns into his head coaching job at Wake Forest these last couple of years, where he's done a pretty good job and could be someone who's a head coach again somewhere else before it's all said and done there at and then you know, it's not necessarily the same because he hasn't succeeded as a coach, but the caller mentioned that 03 USC game, which was Reggie Bush's first game as a college football player. He was a true freshman.
Yeah.
Gets a good lick on a punt return early in that one, although USC got their shots in too.
Right.
Some amazing names from previous seasons and guys that reemerge. It's amazing how small the world can be sometimes.
Yes, I need to go back and look at the staffs that I was on before the Tuberville era, because we were together so long. But you know, I was at Montana State. I've been a lot of places, and I'm sure some of those guys made it to the pros.
It's fun. It's fun when I remember, and it's different from where I'm sitting. But when I remember a guy as a player who then reemerges as a coach years later, it's fun. I mean, and it's easier with the superstar. Like, yes, Jason Kidd, I remember as a player, and now he's the head coach of the Mavericks. Sometimes it's a little bit less obvious. Charlie Fry was I think it was Akron. He was a quarterback in the MAC that I would watch on Tuesday night MACtion. And then he was a NFL quarterback for a couple of years. I think Cleveland. He was Charlie Fry was there in your division. And he's Tom Herman's quarterbacks coach and offensive coordinator down at FAU.
Wow.
Like I was reading about FAU staff, and it was like, oh, yeah, former NFL quarterback Charlie Fry is there in the mix, and it's cool to see that's what that guy's up to now. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. I'll tell you what, we'll take another call before we step aside for the bottom of the hour break. What's up, caller? You are on the air.
Dan, this is Bill again.
Hey, Bill.
I got, since we're grilling old Coach, because I'm going to throw another one at Coach Dunn there.
Okay.
Coach Dunn, 2005, we had a monster team. And Georgia came to town, a 5-5 Georgia team, and beat the daylights out of us. And I was the one to ask.
Hold on. That's not right. 05, the 05 Auburn team wins in Athens.
Okay, yeah, it may have been. Yeah,
06, maybe?
I meant my years may be off.
It could be 06. 06, 06 Georgia wins with true freshman quarterback Matt Stafford.
Yep.
They come yes. to Auburn and win a surprisingly one-sided game.
Yes.
Yeah, what happened that day, Coach?
I don't know, buddy. I wish I knew. I'd be in Vegas right now.
I seem to remember Auburn's offense really struggling to get out of first gear that day. Like, that was one where – and, you know what, again, this is just off the top of my head – I remember Brandon Cox taking a big hit on like the first drive of the game, and the Auburn offense not really being able to do much. And because a year later is the blackout. Like there were a couple games in a row where Georgia's defense just really.
You guys are going to cause me to stop.
Hey, I was just back. I mean, a pair of games. Those were a pair because you guys gave it to Georgia a couple times too. 04,
yeah.
you win there in Athens in 05. I mean, yeah. but no, those back to back wins Georgia had. The 06 one is just surprising because Auburn came in, I think, only one or two losses on the
year.
Yeah,
we were heavy favorites, and they had a freshman quarterback who's still playing. And just one of those games, one of those days. I wish I could explain it. I don't know the answer.
But you know what? It's amazing how mortal a great team can look.
Right.
If the quarterback we were talking about that boxing match.
Yes.
You know, Tyson Fury and Usyk. Fury was in trouble until the right punch gets through Fury. Usyk was in trouble till the right punch gets through Fury's defense and busts his nose.
Right.
That impacts breathing. It impacts output. It impacts how much you want to get punched in the face.
We've all
anymore.
Been punched in the nose, and it can really change your attitude.
And I think Georgia opened the game with a punch to the nose.
Yeah, and we never recovered.
And
we were flat. I do remember how flat we were, and just probably overconfident, which. You should never be, but it happens with young people and coaches even. And so, yeah, thanks for bringing that up, though.
I remember that we were ranked like 5, and 3 and 4 got beat that day. And
yeah, we could have, yep, yep. Very frustrating.
11 o'clock game.
Yeah, we could have moved up. Yeah, I do remember that stuff.
Well, the 06 race was crazy because you had Ohio State who looked to be unbeatable with Troy Smith, the Heisman winner that year. You had Ohio State who looked to be a class above everybody else. And then there was this battle to be two. And the question was, who's the number two team in America? Was it Florida ends up being the second team chosen for the championship game, and then they beat Ohio State soundly in the title game. But you had the question of, should Michigan get a rematch if their only loss is against Ohio State? USC was in position to go until they blew it against UCLA, a vastly inferior UCLA team. Louisville would have been in the conversation there. That was Petrino's Louisville team that people thought was one of the two or three best teams. You know, remember that Louisville-West Virginia game? Where it was like this is mid-major football, and yet it feels like the number one versus number two potentially with Pat White, Brian Brohm, and all that stuff. Like 06 was a wild year, and yeah, Auburn was in the thick of it. Great stuff, Bill. Appreciate it. Yeah,
thank you.
It was there were and you know what, and every team, Coach. That was the other thing from 06. Pretty much every team had at least one loss that year where they said, man, if you gave us another shot at that team,
right.
The way you guys probably felt about Georgia and for that matter, probably Arkansas that year. Like that was a year where it was like, you know what, give us another shot at that team next week and we'll beat them, which is probably worse than the feeling of, oh man, I don't want to see them ever. Like, yeah. You know, that this,
you hate to lose those ones that you really know in deep down that you could have won and should have won, but it doesn't always happen. That's why we roll the ball out.
And a lot, you know, and a lot of Florida folks would tell you that 06 Florida is a game that Florida lets slip away, especially because they ended up winning the championship and they played so well in the first half. You know, I felt like those teams were pretty close to even, you know, when Auburn was getting – and I always thought – and he won a national championship, and it was – you know, if we're just random nostalgia about a guy. I thought Chris Leak had one of the better-looking spirals and one of the better-looking deep balls, the Florida quarterback that finishes that season as the champion, the guy before Tebow.
Yeah.
But you could rattle his cage.
Yeah.
You could get to him, and he would and once or twice a game, he'd throw one – where there wasn't a Florida player within 5 or 7 yards of the ball. And there's two of them. I think Eric Brock comes down with one of them where it's like, there's two of those in the 06 Florida game where it's like, you're not going to win. You're not going to win big games, you know, against great teams if your quarterback occasionally throws the ball, you know, just lofts one to center field.
Yeah, just why?
No,
yeah, why?
And Florida was, I mean, that was the only game Florida lost all year. They were able to overcome that and win the championship. But no, that was, and that's still, I would say, on my short list of as loud and chaotic as, you know, speaking of that 05 Iron Bowl earlier, I would put the 06 Florida game on like that when it started to tilt towards Auburn, and I mean that place was as loud as I've ever heard Jordan Hare say.
It was like, exciting.
Yeah, really fun stuff. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. We'll be back with more. You are listening to the Friday edition of The Drive.
AU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio hanging out with Coach Don Dunn. Drew at the controls. Love to hear from you, 334-321-1390, the Drive hotline presented by our friends at Skybar Cafe. Reminder, this hour of The Drive, sponsored by the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Drive text box, Drive podcast, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Bill Cameron at the Rolling Stones concert, he'll be back on Monday. We're taking some calls. Just remember, folks, a new segment, grilling Coach Don Dunn, where you ask Coach Dunn some questions has taken hold. But yeah, love to hear from you on anything you want to talk about. And let's get back to the phones. Caller, you are on the air.
Hey, this is Clay from Montgomery.
Hello, Clay.
Hey, Dan and Don, how are y'all this afternoon?
Doing all right. Thanks for calling.
Good, thank you.
All right, hey. I was talking about something else, but you just talked about the stadium being loud. I've been to many a game. I was not at the Mountaintop game, so I don't know how loud it was when Auburn entered the stadium in '89. But I was at the 1991 Florida State and Auburn game, and I think we were down 17. Right beginning the fourth quarter and came back and won that game. It was loud that day, but 1993, Auburn versus Florida at home, that's the loudest I've ever heard that stadium, and it never stopped. No one sat down. Your body vibrated for the whole second half. It was 30 minutes. That was that, like, 48-45 game. It was nonstop. That is the most exciting game I've ever attended in my life.
I've had someone else cited the – and there were a couple Auburn-Florida games from the Spurrier era that people have also pointed to in that tradition. But Auburn-Florida, 93 is the 38-35 win to move Auburn to 7-0. And I've heard that mentioned before as one of the great moments in the stadium.
You, man, I'm sitting in section 39 right there, and Florida is on the 3-yard line, and I look at my friend that's sitting right beside me, because that would be the left hand side of the end zone right where the interception happened, and I looked at Tripp and I said, they're fixing to score and be up 17-0 with 10 minutes to go in the first quarter. We're fixing to get our you-know-what gig. And interception, 97 yards, touchdown. And from that moment on, it was nonstop excitement. That is the most exciting game I've ever been to.
You know, a game that comes to mind where I turned to somebody and said, we're about to get obliterated, and it didn't happen, would be 09 West Virginia, which is the first year of the Chizik era, when the rain game,
right?
The game with the crazy rainstorm, yes. The delayed game, which I believe Noel Devine takes two runs about 80 yards apiece, and West Virginia's leading 14-0. 5 or 6 minutes into that game before Auburn responds with 4 or 5 touchdowns from Chris Todd
right.
that night. But Noel Devine is outrunning the fastest guys on the field for Auburn's defense, and you're saying this is not how this game needed to start for an Auburn team that wanted to.
That was special, man. He was special.
Yeah. He you know what? His son was a recruit recently, and I said sign him. No, like sight unseen. All I need to know is that it's Noel Devine Jr. Yeah, Noel Devine Jr. is all I needed to hear, and there'd be an offer on his door.
But no, earlier Coach had mentioned talking about freshmen coming in and playing, and even junior college players coming in, and how impressive it is that, especially on the line. Now, Coach, were you there? Were you at Auburn still in 2007, weren't you?
Yes, sir.
How impressive was it when Auburn goes to number 3 Florida in the swamp and runs out 3, not redshirt, but true freshmen on the offensive line and beats Florida in the swamp? How impressive was that performance by those cats?
That was unbelievable.
I think it was them, but
yeah. Lee Ryan and Chaz would have been your
and Mike Berry.
Well, no, so Lee Ryan and Chaz Ramsey would have been the 3 true freshmen at that point playing on the offensive line in 07. Mike Berry, I think, probably in that mix as well. If not, it's a year late.
Somebody got hurt the week before, and they dropped another because Lee Ziemba was starting as a freshman.
Right,
and they'd moved. There was a different center. I can't believe I'm blanking on the young man's name. It was the
Byron Isom.
It was no. It was I would. I'll come back with it, but there because I believe a okay. center moved
anyhow,
to.
There yeah. were 3 freshmen on that line of scrimmage.
Right,
regardless.
True freshmen.
And how impressive is that to go in a place like that, a team that was rolling like Florida was,
yep.
and that line to do, and then y'all's defense to do what y'all did and just shut them down, basically make them kick field goals.
That's one of those fun games.
Bosley.
Yeah, Bosley.
Jason Bosley had been the center, and I think at some point Ryan moves to center and Bosley moves to tackle. And he's fighting for his life as a tackle
yeah,
there in 07.
Against Florida in the swamp.
Yeah. And then what happens 3 years later? What happens?
Oh, well, those are two of those guys. Ryan and Lee are starting pretty much.
Trophy off the field.
Ryan and Lee are starting pretty much every snap for the 2010 team. We were talking about that earlier.
Chance.
That's foundational pieces.
Yep.
That trick. I love going back. The older you get, the more you like going back and reliving the past and stuff.
Especially
and
when you win.
Me when y'all were talking about young players playing, is that game because that Florida game happened to be my daughter was in the 6th grade and she was a 6th grade attendant, and I had to be at her homecoming dance, and we were watching the TV. In the all us Auburn fans were watching the TV out in the lobby of the little hotel thing where they were doing their homecoming dance, and we're fist bumping and going crazy when we hit the field goal, And then we have to go back in and act like we've been there the whole time. So
that's funny.
That was a lovely day. Y'all gave me a great memory that night, Coach.
Well, that's great. That's fun game. Woo.
That's one of the great road wins, I think, of the Tuberville era to go to number 4 Florida and beat. I mean, it was the first. I think it was Urban Meyer's first loss.
Is that when we kicked the field goal again?
The two kicks from Wes.
The Wes Byram.
And he did the chop.
See you later, Gator.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But that's and I miss that so much because the Auburn, Florida, that was I loved that matchup. I mean, it's not Georgia, but man, it was right behind Georgia. And that's what I hate about we don't play Mississippi State this year. I was not alive the last time we didn't play Mississippi State.
Yep, and they were always a tough out for us. A tough game.
The decision. I mean, I understand. You know, they couldn't preserve every single rivalry of every single team and stuff. But the Mississippi schools not playing the Alabama schools feels like an oversight by the scheduling folks. And that's. For Ole Miss to not play Alabama or Auburn, for Mississippi State to not play Alabama or Auburn, feels like less than a full SEC schedule.
That's crazy. I mean, Mississippi State should either have played either Auburn or Alabama because that was another one. You know, I mean, Mississippi State ended Alabama's win streak.
I'm pretty sure Alabama is the most represented school at Ole Miss after Mississippi as well. Like the thought that they're going to have a season where they don't play Alabama or Auburn at Ole Miss. I mean, the last couple of years, the Ole Miss game has been an event here in Auburn. It's been something of a happening because you have so many Alabama students at Ole Miss, and often Alabama's on the road or it's a bye week, so a lot of Alabama students are in town too. And yeah, that's off the schedule too.
Well, Dan, I mean, let's forget Alabama. What about Auburn? The stuff that Kiffin's been saying about Auburn, and he was supposed to be the coach,
and former Ole Miss coach Hugh Freeze is the head coach at Auburn. Yeah, I know. It seems like a crazy time to pull the plug on that rivalry when it's been so. I mean, I would hope that. It's crazy to nominate that as one of the three permanent games because there's not enough tradition compared to other ones. But I'd be fine with Auburn and Ole Miss playing every year.
I tell you what, I'd rather have Ole Miss than LSU. Now I love LSU, and now I would take Florida, Georgia, and Alabama if we have three. I'm Coach Dye. Give me Amen Corner.
Yep.
But I would take Ole Miss over just because they're Ole Miss. And they just—it's just fun to beat them.
Yeah, no, those games have been. And I know you know Ole Miss has won a couple of them lately too, but it's been those games have been thrilling and competitive. I like the flavor Lane Kiffin brings to the college football, a little bit of spice.
I do too. The ish is great. It's great. But that was just set up, and I mean it's just like sitting on a tee, and the SEC just was like. Swung and missed.
Yeah,
you missed that.
That's a whiff, and the Alabama considerations are real too. Like the fact that you're not going to have either of those schools on Alabama's schedule, is wild to me as well.
Well, and that's where my crazy. I'm not a gambler, but if I were to want to just like take $10 and throw it away, I would take Ole Miss. And Missouri to play in the SEC championship game this year
Missouri's one of the only teams in the league that doesn't play Georgia or Texas in the regular season this year.
Look at their schedules, and if you look at those schedules, and if Missouri, the only thing about Missouri, I think Missouri's going to fall off. Though I think they're going to get propped up so much that they're not going to live up to their hype. But if they're as good as they were last year. They are very possibly going to be in there, and if something stupid happens, like, you know, Georgia goes to Alabama, Alabama can beat them. Alabama loses a couple of two games.
Texas stumbles a couple of times.
Yep. Georgia ends up stumbling somewhere. Let's say Auburn goes over there and is still ticked off about them putting us on homecoming and somehow pulls up a miracle upset. And then Ole Miss doesn't have to play Auburn or Alabama. They lose to Georgia. They got one loss. I mean, there is a road for those two to be.
And Ole Miss has the horses. I feel like they think they can beat anybody on their whole schedule, if you know, with the moves they've made. But I would say, and we appreciate the phone call. Missouri is the one to me where, and coach, this is interesting. Like, Missouri's got four out of conference games that feel like layups. They got four SEC games against the four teams that are probably going to be picked at the bottom of the league in Vanderbilt, Arkansas, South Carolina, and Mississippi State.
Right.
And so that's eight games Missouri you feel like should win. The question is against Auburn, and it's Auburn and Oklahoma at home, and it's at A&M and at Alabama. Like, you got four games there. If you go 3-1, you could be an 11-1 team in the SEC championship game. If you go 0-4, it's 8-4, and it's probably a disappointing 8-4 season for a team that could be a preseason top 10 playoff pick. But it's four games, and it's four games where it's got nothing to do with the schedule. It's what can you do against four teams that, you know, if you're a playoff caliber team, you probably should be 2-2 or better in those four games. And I wonder what the committee would do with if Missouri went 2-2 in those games, or 10-2, 10-2 SEC team with a couple of, 10-2 SEC team that lacks a signature win.
Right.
You know, could they be on the outside looking in of a 12th? Yeah,
interesting.
We'll find out. We got to take a break and wrap things up. We'll be back with more. You are listening to The Drive.
Hey, this is Billy Plummer here with the